Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday, live at the Marker in Key West, Florida. Having a blast here today by the pool. I think Nashville might be warming up a little bit, and it's cool down here, so I guess we deserve that. But we say hello now to the head coach of the Innsworth Tigers and also ESPN NFL analyst, who I enjoyed watching Sunday night with Scott Van Pelt. Tim Hasselbeck is with us now. Timmy, what's up?
What's up? I'm at the pool, too. You know, in this 38-degree weather.
Hey, what is it that Jimmy Johnson used to say? let the mind control the body. Don't let the body control the mind. Is that what that is?
It's a little chilly. It doesn't feel like Nashville weather. I moved here 10 years ago for, I think, warmer than this. A little windy, too.
Yeah, for sure. So I love that SVP brought up the playoffs with you briefly on SportsCenter. That was pretty cool. Give a little shout-out. So got a big one coming up this week.
Yeah, first off, Scott is very into it. He's still mad that Matthew's the offensive coordinator and he's not the offensive coordinator. he peppers me every week that we need to run more double moves. But yeah, he follows it closely. Definitely excited about it. And then yeah, for us, we're excited to host the playoff game. You know, it's funny practicing yesterday. It was cold out. It was like, but then you look at the forecast. It's like, no, it's going to be really nice on Friday night. So I'm sure we'll have a good turnout. And we're looking forward to it.
So let's kind of look at the NFL. The Titans are coming off the off week to play the Houston Texans. You got a team in Houston that had one of the biggest comebacks in NFL history in the fourth quarter to beat Jacksonville, and then you have the Titans that are just trying to put something good together. What is kind of your philosophy of how to treat the post-bye week if you're an NFL team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that especially when you haven't had success, I mean, I think everything's on the table in terms of what you're willing to try, what you're risks you're willing to take. And I think it's been discussed a little bit. Just, you know, you got an interim head coach. You got, basically probably, a lot of guys that maybe will be elsewhere a year from now. Like, to me, it's not one of those times to, be ultra conservative or, not be willing to give somebody an opportunity. I mean, I think that's really what I would say, kind of as you have a little bit of time because you have an off week to just say, like, all right, where are we right now? How much season is left? And, what are the things that we can find out about the guys that are, in this organization? What are the things that we can do to find out about them, over the next roughly 2 months? So that's how I would handle it. Not saying they will, but that certainly would be my approach.
What is kind of your thoughts on Houston and that comeback win against Jacksonville? And they did it with the backup quarterback, and yeah, it looks like Stroud may not even play this week. So what does that do for them?
Yeah, look, I do think Davis Mills is a pretty good player, albeit a young and inexperienced player. I do think he's a good player, and I do think that he had moments where he played really well this past week, which gave them a chance to win. Houston's been interesting, for me, because I think that some of it's been injuries. Some of it's been, maybe expectations were a little bit too high and the quarterback wasn't playing as well as, maybe people thought he would, after, kind of how his career started. But I think they're a good, not great team. I think they're definitely well coached on the defensive side. They're probably a team that feels like, they can be in the mix if they can pick up a couple wins with their backup quarterback. And I'm sure, that's similar to what their messaging is this week.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, we're live at the Marker Key West Harbor Resort in Key West. This is a place where Tim Hasselbeck would stay because it's that nice. Right, Tim?
Hey, it rolled off your tongue like you're very familiar with it. You probably had multiple vacations there, Joe. It's news to me.
Thank you, buddy.
Is there a Holiday Inn down there? I might know that.
Exactly, right? Listen, let me ask you this. How much do you think, okay, if you're the GM and you've got an interim coach in Mike McCoy, mm-hmm, how much do you input with McCoy on not a game plan but handling of a Cam Ward? Are you just stay away? Because I don't think I could stay away.
I would think that you're pretty involved in terms of giving an opinion or a desire what you might want, you know, which would be, hey, look, like, you know, why aren't we playing this guy on special teams? Why are we not, you know, is this receiver a guy that we can get some reps, you know, to? You know, are there carries that we can give a young running back that maybe we wouldn't, you know, otherwise, you know, give reps to? You know, I do think you would want to push the envelope on that stuff. Yeah, and then, you know, as far as the quarterback goes, you know, I think it might be, you know, if you're playing him, you know, maybe there's a suggestion of, hey, why are we doing so much of this? You know, why aren't we moving the pocket more with him? Or, you know, things of that nature. But, you know, ultimately, you got to let your guys coach and scheme and plan, you know, so that they can, you know, at least try to have success. But I do think from a personnel perspective of who's getting opportunities, I would think that there are significant conversations being had.
How bad do you think, not bad, probably too extreme of a word, but difficult do you think it is right now for Cam Ward and all that's going on? I mean, the head coach is gone, the guy you brought in, you've worked with for a while. Now, you know, Bo Hardigree's there. And, I mean, all the stuff that's going on, I mean, I'm surprised Cam Ward's keeping his head above water. And that's my perspective, because so much is being thrown at him, and now your coach is gone. I mean, this is a life lesson he's getting this year, I think, Tim.
I think bad works. I think very bad would work. You know, just it's terrible, right? Like you go through the whole draft process. You know, you're being evaluated by all these, you know, coaching staffs and front offices, and you know the group that picks you. You know, now you know half of it's gone, and so you know that even though there's 2 months of the season left, that it's going to be a complete reboot in terms of, you know, who your quarterback coach is, who your offensive coordinator is, who your head coach is. So, yeah, it's a really bad feeling. And so, look, I do think, you know, when you go back to some of his comments, you know, I think in training camp about probably how he was raised, what his experience was, you know, what he's, you know, how he's seen family members work and things of that nature. I'm not surprised that he's handled it well, and I would expect him to continue to handle it well. But it's a really bad situation because you're starting from scratch come the spring, you know, once you have a new coach in place and you know, new offense, new philosophy, all of that stuff.
So if you're him, though, I mean, how do you treat the remainder of this year without it feeling like to both him and the organization – like it's a wasted year?
Yeah, what makes it not a wasted year is how you handle it and handle, like, how you go about your business, right? So, like, if you, with all of the excitement at the beginning part of the year, had a routine of being the last one leaving the building because you were watching film, then you don't change that. Because while the roster will look very different a year from now, there's still going to be players there that saw the way you handled this adversity. And I think that, and there'll be people in the building in general who saw the way you handled this adversity. So it's not a wasted year for, you know, the example and learning and growing that you can have kind of during this time, as well as, you know, the equity that you're building in terms of the type of leader you are in the organization with how you handle this. So, look, is it a wasted year in terms of, you know, being rookie of the year and going to the Pro Bowl and leading your team in the postseason and, you know, stacking, you know, experience with, you know, in the offense that you're going to run a year from now? Yeah, like that's gone. That's not going to happen. But it doesn't mean there isn't still value in terms of how you persevere and lead throughout this season. And it feels like that's what he's doing, you know, being on the outside looking in. It feels like that's what he's doing. And it'll mean a lot. And it'll mean a lot to veteran players to be like, no, I remember, like this isn't fake when it's going well. This isn't fake because I saw him when guys were getting fired and people were getting benched and people wanted to blame him for, you know, us not playing well. Like how he handled this you know, matters to how everyone else should handle when they're struggling. So I don't think it's a waste from that perspective.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck on the Chasing Big Joe Show. Tim, going forward on the field, what does Cam Ward need more than anything? And I ask this because, you know, when Steve McNair was quarterback of the Titans, his safety valve was Frank Wycheck, who became his best friend on the field. What does Cam Ward need in that kind of world, that guy who's always there for him on the field who could save him when times go bad?
Yeah, I think all quarterbacks, you know, need somebody that they can really trust, right? So, like, when it's a gotta-have-it moment, you're like, listen, I get, you know, coverage is telling me to go here or there, but, like, the reality is crunch time, the guy that I know is going to be dependable, going to find a way to come down with the football, like, I'm going that direction. So you're right about McNair and Wycheck. And I think that, listen, it's Mahomes and Kelsey. You know, it's been, you know, it was Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams for a period of time. Like, there are guys that, you know, you just trust. And so, yeah, I think there's no question he needs that. And I think that some people used to say, like, oh, it's got to be a tight end. Like, I don't. I think it's got to be somebody that you can move around in your offense, a guy that can play inside or play outside. And I think if you do that, then, you know, it does make things easier for other guys in your offense to have success. So I think he needs that. I think the other thing that needs to happen is, like, when you play in an offense that has balance, it just helps everybody. Like, I mean, you look at the Bills. When the Bills play well, like, they hand the ball to James Cook at least 18 times. Like, when you know, when teams are able to run the football, I mean, look at the success that Stafford is having right now. A lot of it is because, like, they are still able to run the football. And so I think that is always going to matter, because I've said to you guys a million times, it still is a dependent position. And, look, when you can run the football, you got a guy that you can trust, it's easier for the quarterback to play well.
We'll have more with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next, live from the Marker in Key West here on 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game, live from the Marker in Key West, Florida. Continuing our conversation with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. So, Tim, as we've, you know, kind of hit the halfway mark or close to it, you got a group of 8-win teams all out of the AFC, Denver, Indianapolis, New England, and then 7-win teams in the Rams, Eagles, Seahawks, and then Chargers as well. Do you think that the Super Bowl champion comes out of that group?
I do. You know, obviously there's a couple of teams in there that you go back to the beginning of the year and you think about, you know, like being able to, you know, make a run, like the Bills, for example. Like, could they be a really good team? Sure. You know, the Chiefs aren't in that mix, right? So, like, you know, the Chiefs would be another one, right? So, like, I think there's – look, those teams are certainly capable. I think Baltimore is about to go on a bit of a heater with their, you know, defensive players healthy, Lamar back. So, you know, where the type of team you are, you know, in late October is not the same team that you're going to be, you know, come January. So, look, I think there's a chance, but I do like the way the teams you mentioned, if it was like, hey, take those, like, somewhere out of this group or the field, I think I would take it out of that group.
Do you think that, like, I look at Denver and New England specifically, they've won 7 in a row, and I think New England's been maybe a little more, people have paid a little more attention to them because of who they are and the coach. But, like, Denver, I mean, they're impressive. So do you think that that's sustainable, though?
I think what Denver's doing may not be sustainable. Like, you look at all their, you know, you look at some of the way they win, the late nature of them, and then also who they're playing sometimes. I think you can look at it and say, like, is that really an impressive win? You know, like, for example, like their win against the Giants, like a lot of good fortune, quarterback didn't play well for the vast majority of the game. You know, they, you know, kind of miraculous win late. That to me is different than being like, no, we're going to go to Tampa. Tampa's one of the best teams in the NFC. And we're going to go toe-to-toe with them. And really we're going to be more physical than them. And we're going to win it that way. Like, to me, I think that's part of the reason that you know, there's a lot of attention being paid to, you know, New England because, look, both quarterbacks are young, up-and-coming, you know, stars in the league. Sean Payton's got a Super Bowl, you know, under his belt. So I think it's more the nature of and the quality of the wins, even though New England does have a last-place schedule just based on, you know, the record a year ago.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck on the Chasing Big Joe show. Tim, I want to ask you, you know, Mike Singletary is one of the greatest linebackers ever, was a head coach of the 49ers, got frustrated because guys didn't approach the game the same way he did. And I ask you this, why is Mike Vrabel being so successful in New England? He was successful here in Nashville because he was a pretty daggum good player in the NFL. How is he getting these guys to buy in where, like, a Singletary was having difficulty doing that? Because A lot of these, as you well know, a lot of these great ex-players become coaches get frustrated because they don't approach the game the way that they did. But Mike Vrabel, he's doing something really special in New England, Tim.
Yeah, I think what he does an incredible job of is – I think he is able to connect with all of his players. Like, not just the players that were like him. I think he's able to connect with all of his players. And I think that while he connects with them, he's also not afraid to be incredibly hard on them. So he can be incredibly hard on somebody, then at the same time, like, put his arm around somebody and let them know how much he appreciates, like, what he is doing. I think it's just like a natural feel. I think it's kind of the type of teammate he was and type of leader that he was. I think he does that so well. And I think some of it maybe is just like the understanding of like, oh, I remember what it was like as a player. I remember what I felt like this time of year when I was banged up. And look, I remember what it felt like when, you know, I was new to a team, or I remember what it felt like when I, you know, was an older player. So I think he gets all of it. I really do. And he's somehow in tune with it. I think you just, like, look at his interaction with his quarterback is good. I think when you look at his interaction with Stephon Diggs, catches, you know, the onside kick and gets down on the hands team. Like, you know, there's, I'm guessing, I don't know this, but, like, a laughter of, hey, I know you don't want to be out there because you're, you know, number one wide receiver, but this is an important part of the game, and I'm going to smile and give you a hug, and that's how we're going to do it. Like, I think it's amazing. I think it connects with all of his players, and I think it's one of the reasons that, you know, guys respond to him so well.
Did you tell us one time that you would not tell a player in private that you wouldn't tell him in public in front of a team? Did you tell us that?
Yeah, like, I kind of have a deal with, like, my guys is, like, if I'm talking about anything, playing time, you know, basically, there are no secrets. There's not, like, one conversation that I'm going to have with one tight end that I wouldn't have with all of the tight ends. So, like, you know, there's no secrets on it. It's like, okay, you know, why is Billy playing over Tommy? It's like, well, because Billy made fewer mistakes. But, like, I'm not saying that just to one guy. I'm saying it to the whole group, like, no secrets on it. So, you know, I think when you just deal with, like, you know, transparency and honesty, and then also just being very direct, I think it's just the best way for everyone to kind of understand where they stand and what it takes.
I think that's great. What's it like as a head coach when a player you've been really hard on finally gets it? What's the? I got to think the reward as a coach and as a human being is next level amazing.
Yeah, I love it. I think there's nothing more rewarding when somebody that, like, you know, is not doing something a certain way, like, whatever it is, you know, are they, you know, a specific, you know, block or technique, you know, they're not doing it, or just listen, like, playing through an injury, toughness. You know, when somebody does something that they weren't doing or didn't believe that they could do, and then there's buy-in, and then, you know, they see the success, you know, that the team has, or even they have individually when they do it the right way, there's nothing more rewarding than that. And I feel like I've been fortunate, you know, just in, you know, just about two seasons here of seeing guys who have done that. And I've definitely had my time where, like, I've challenged somebody. I've said, like, look, I expect more from you out of this. And there are times that I've, you know, I've seen it change, and, you know, they're, are some scenarios where I might still be waiting for it to change. But
right.
That's the awesomeness kind of this, especially with guys of the age that I get to coach right now. And but I think that translates whether you're in college or whether you're somebody coaching in the pros to see it happen at that level.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. You played in the league. Your brother played in the league with Paul Tagliabue as the commissioner. He passed away a couple days ago. What did Commissioner Tagliabue mean to the NFL?
Yeah, listen, I, you know, the family that I grew up in was one where my dad was a player rep. So he was, you know, drafted in the league in the late 70s, you know, was a player rep and a pretty vocal player rep in the 80s, probably led to his trade from the Patriots to the Raiders. And so, you know, I think that, you know, the growth of the league, what it has meant for people that have been a part of the league on so many different levels. And, you know, I think that, like, obviously, you know, Paul Tagliabue, in terms of the growth of the league, the ability to find an agreement with the players' union that was better for the players than, than the one that, you know, they were pre-1982, I think is significant. And so, look, it's kind of interesting. My father was on the Raiders, and they won Super Bowl 18, you know, and that was just in 1983. Well, like, look at where we are now in, you know, like, it seems like that wasn't all that long ago. I don't think I'm that old, but, like, it is. Like, we're much past Super Bowl 18. It's totally different now, and it's a totally different reward to the guys that are playing the game. And, you know, it obviously, you know, in terms of the growth of fans and the business of it all, has been good, I think, for everybody involved.
Yeah, well said, Tim. I appreciate the time, as always. Who you got Friday night?
We host CPA Friday night, so save that parking spot. Hey, listen, Joe's come. Chase, still waiting for you. Waiting for you to come by. I'm sure we need to set you up with a studio, I'm sure we could do that. But, you know, come on by.
I just, you know, just you just tell me what door I can go in.
That's right.
I'll be there. That's going to be a good one, CPA.
Main entrance. Joe can tell you where to find it. Main entrance. Joe's sideline pass has been revoked for some of his behavior a couple weeks ago. So if you guys want to sit together, it might have to be in a press box.
Well, my sideline pass revoked because I started a fight with some NBA parents, and so you're welcome. You're welcome, Tim. I defended you that night.
I'm sure they
awesome.
Charged it.
Thank you, Tim. We'll talk next
week.
Yep, absolutely. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach of the Innsworth Tigers.
So a few things at 1:45. We have a very special guest calling in to surprise one Chase McCabe.
I don't know what this is. Special guest
at 1:45. So be tuned for that. Again, our coverage here at the Harbor Marker Key West Resort brought to you by our good friends at Reunion Township. Check them out online at reuniontownship.com and at City Limits Apartments down in Spring Hill. Website liveatcitylimits.com. Beautiful properties in Nashville. We stay in Key West. We stay here, back there in Nashville. If you need a place to stay, check Reunion Township and City Limits Apartments in Spring Hill as well. Also thankful to the Roxy 8 Theater in Dixon. Belinda, thank you for everything. And to the Nashville Cats for being partners with us on this trip down to Key West.
There's some news on L'Jarius Sneed that might mean the end. We will discuss coming up next. Here on the Chase and Big Joe Show, live in Key West, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. This is Joe's karaoke song.
It was. It really got him fired up in the karaoke bar last night.
It did. Live here in Key West at the Marker Key West. Having a good time. Appreciate them for having us. David Janes back at the studios in Nashville. David, what is the temperature there right now?
Cold, I think in the 50s. But yeah, cold.
The perfect answer. Just cold.
That's good, actually.
Hey, look, we're bringing back warm weather with us. We'll be back late tomorrow night and Thursday and Friday and Saturday. It's supposed to be a beautiful weekend, so we're bringing back the weather with us. So, you guys, we're all part of this together. We appreciate you.
There's a little news with L'Jarius Sneed, and I don't think it's really – earth-shattering new news, but I do kind of feel like his time here is coming to an end. Paul Kuharsky, paulkuharsky.com, reporting that a grand jury has indicted Titans cornerback L'Jarius Sneed on Tuesday in Dallas County, Texas, for the failure to report a felony where a reasonable person would have believed serious bodily harm or death may have resulted. It's a Class A misdemeanor, which is punishable by a maximum of 1 year in jail and a $4,000 fine or both. A trial date does not yet to appear to be set. So this is all from, you know, I guess a couple years ago now, where he allegedly saw his, I guess, assistant, you know, whatever he is, shot multiple times at another car and all of this stuff. So they obviously knew about this or have known about this. You know, he did start the season. He's once again hurt. There have been more bad things than good things when it comes to L'Jarius Sneed and his time with the Titans. My guess is they're going to part company at the end of the year.
Is he – I'm trying to go my mind right now. I think he's the worst free agent signing the Titans have ever
had.
Oh, the trade. Thank you. Okay. All right. I feel better now.
Yeah.
Okay. How about the worst acquisition ever is this guy? I mean, Pickens was 1 year, $5 million. He was terrible in 2000. Thigpen at least contributed some when he was signed away from the Steelers in 98. But acquisition, trade and free agent together, I think he might be –
Yeah,
God, I forgot that was a trade. And who traded him to the Titans?
Well, Borgonzi was a part of it. Yeah. Now he's stuck with him.
Is there anybody that's in the room with Sneed? I mean, there's been some bad ones acquisition-wise.
Man, that's a good question.
Who was Cam Wimberly? Remember he got signed in 2012?
Cameron Wimberly.
Wimberly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Wimberly, that was a bad one. So you're just saying – free agent signings or trades.
Or yeah, acquisitions.
Acquisitions.
People they've acquired, either or, who've come to the team. I think Sneed is absolutely the worst. And there might be Aaron Brewer, wasn't he? But that's the pay was a couple million. Not
yeah,
compared
that one,
to
yeah.
18, $19 million.
I mean, who was the left tackle they signed that was terrible?
Oh, who? Andy Levitre was awful.
Oh, that was a bad one, yeah.
Awful.
Then he goes to the Falcons and it's good.
And they go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. now, who's the left they signed from the Eagles?
Andre Dillard?
Yeah.
Yes.
He was bad. But I mean, I think a trade's worse because you're giving up something.
Yes,
and they gave up a third to get Sneed.
Oh, my gosh.
To get a hurt player.
And they knew he was hurt.
Yeah.
Terrible on that. We're leaving somebody.
I know
out.
We are too. I'm thinking through it, but we definitely are leaving somebody out.
I'm trying to
Vic
go back.
Beasley, that was a bad one.
Yep.
Yeah, that was 6745. That was a good one.
Didn't he say he just quit football and then next thing you know he's playing in like the UFL or something? How bad is it that you quit?
Julio Jones.
Clowney.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. Who?
Clowney.
Yeah, Clowney.
Yep,
Clowney
that was bad.
Yep.
Now, I think what makes Sneed worse, this was a 4-year deal with everything, how much he was getting paid. But, yeah, Clowney was bad. Julio's bad. I don't consider Adrian Peterson because they just threw something at him. It wasn't that. But you're right. When you do a trade, you invest something in a guy, and you get nothing back for that.
I know this was a waiver claim, but where do you put Moss?
That's a good question. Probably – I don't think he was terrible because we didn't see.
I just don't think they knew how to use him.
And then it became, well, he runs the same position as Kenny Britt. Okay.
Well, what's funny is anytime that we have asked since then, asked Jeff Fisher about him, he says nothing but good things about him.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, it was great. You know, it just didn't work out.
It's
like, well, I mean, why didn't it work out?
It's funny. Moss goes to the Super Bowl with the Niners 2 years later and gets there. So.
Oh, well, okay, Wes in Clarksville makes a good point. I mean, this isn't acquisitions, but, I mean, the AJ trade is going to be the worst trade because you get rid of.
Well, I'm just talking – no, I'm talking about people that have come here. I mean, that AJ, yeah, obviously, that's – the AJ
God,
Brown
they did
trade –
give up a second for Julio, though.
We retire that to the rafters.
Yeah.
There's nothing going to come close, but Julio from the Falcons, they gave a second up for that?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yep. Burke, Wes in Clarksville. Now Burks has more yards in his last game than he did all of last season, but he's injured again.
Is he? Oh, my gosh. What's his injury now?
I don't know. Toenail.
I mean, good for Burks, man, to go do that. But I just think this overpaying for free agent, I think that's done now for a while. I mean, yeah. I really now, think it's done.
Less than a month into his tenure with the Washington Commanders, Burks will miss time after surgery on his finger and won't be available when his team travels to Spain.
I wonder which finger it is. Wait, he's doing up a travel to Spain? Yeah. I would play. I'm fine. Take me to Spain. I'm good. Then you get to Spain. You're like, hey, my finger hurts. Which finger is it? This one right here? Oh, okay. We get that.
Oh,
isn't it crazy? Like the other night watching the Chargers play and Elijah Molden is starting for the Chargers. You just go around the league like, these guys, what in the hell happened here? I mean, to just see them thrive other play. And good for them. Good for them to do that. I think like the kid from Overton, Theo Jackson, is that the play? Yeah. A guy like that who's having a nice career, the Vikings, who just gave up on. And he tells you, you never know, man.
He has 4 receptions for 72 yards in 2 games this year. Last year, 5 games.
Yes, give it.
4 receptions for 34 yards.
Oh, man. Oh.
He's been targeted 4 times. And he's caught all of them.
Oh, that's great. The Titans are like my phone. I'd turn it off and just reboot it and hope it comes back better. That's what we need here. So that's crazy.
Oh, it's so good. 615-737-1025. All right. I have no idea what's coming up next. So
I love it. We have a special guest calling in on this Veterans Day. Chase doesn't know, and you guys will be surprised as well. So we look forward to that. Again, we love in our state, the Harbor Marker Key West Resort. Here in Key West, thank you to Reunion Township at 109 and City Limits Apartments for being partners with us coming down here. Really appreciate the teamwork and everything else to allow us to stay down here at the Harbor Marker Key West Resort in Key West.
We'll have more coming. Thank you, Dr. Crane. We'll have more coming next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Veterans Day, this Tuesday. Here at the Marker in Key West, Florida, and glad you could be with us. I have no idea what is about to happen, so I'm just going to let you take it.
It is Veterans Day, and there is a young man who has spent his entire career honoring veterans and make sure they're recognized, and he joins us now. We're honored to welcome to the Chase and Big Joe Show our good friend Lee Greenwood.
Oh,
Lee,
wow.
Thank you so much for doing this. God bless you. Thank you. How are you, sir?
I'm terrific, thank you. I'm also enjoying the Florida sun. We're with a veterans event down here in Florida, and I've sent numerous messages out today honoring all the veterans that I know and all the men and women who have served so unselfishly to protect our nation in times when sometimes we even wonder whether or not they should be there or not. They always activate their duties, and many of them come back wounded, and we take care of those as well.
Lee, you've made a career making sure they're recognized, the men and women. Why is this so important to you that you honor our heroes all the time?
You know, let me give you just a little bit of the backstory. I was raised on a sharecropper's farm in Sacramento, California, and the reason I was there living with my grandparents is because my father joined the Navy right after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. 4 years in the Navy, 2 years in the Merchant Marine, and my mother, a piano player, had to fend for herself because they got divorced, so sent me and my sister to Sacramento, and she would work in clubs like when she was very early in her life, and I compliment her for that sacrifice, and I compliment my father for his service. I too would work early in nightclubs, 14 years old, before I graduated high school and moved to Nevada for a 20-year tenure trying to learn what I had to do as an artist. But all of that time, USO tours were prevalent in my life. My first one was when I was 17 years old and went to Alaska for Ammendorf Air Force Base. And then we toured all over the coast of California where I'm from. And then in Nevada, flew with the Thunderbirds. And then after I got to Tennessee, we started flying with the National Guard there in Tennessee and went all over the world doing over 16 USO tours worldwide, even with Bob Hope. And I think there was a point in my life where I realized it was more than a dedication to what I believe in. It was my responsibility, particularly after the release of my song in 1984. before 83, it was God Bless the USA, which became kind of a military anthem before anything else, and was used by the National Guard. Even I've sang for 10 presidents. I was a Reagan supporter from the very beginning, who eventually that became real obvious. But I, as a Christian, I, you know, I always put God first. And I think that's why my song, God Bless the USA, has resonated for these 40 years.
Lee Greenwood joins us now. I actually had the honor to see you perform that when you had your theater in Pigeon Forge way back when. Went with my grandparents, and it was pretty cool. But, I mean, did you – I know this is an obvious question, but did you think that the song would have the lasting impact that it has? I mean, it is literally played at any event honoring the military at any time. Did you have any idea that it would become what it has become?
No, I mean, it was a gradual ascent, and events of the world kind of played into that a little bit, where, I mean, I know it was big at first, and it was Song of the Year in 1985 at the CMA, and I was honored by the entire community for that. But I think after the Gulf War, then the attack on America, and then President Trump using my song in a very consistent manner. I mean, I worked four different campaigns with other presidents, but not until President Trump elevated me past a national artist. I'm now an international artist, and we travel the world, and people recognize me and my song everywhere, and it gives me great humility. But I get these little videos all the time from kids that are like 6, 7, 8, where they're grandparents have passed the song to their parents as a matter of a way to be patriotic. Then the parents pass it to their kids, and I get these little videos all the time where kids are singing my song at like 6, 7, 8 years old, waving a flag.
Yes.
In many places where the national anthem is inappropriate internationally, they will play God Bless USA because there's no restriction on that. So as things move forward, and they're still moving forward, as long as I can continue to sing and tour the country and the world. I mean, I just I see it continually being in front of the framework of patriotism.
I love it. Lee Greenwood is on the Chase and Big Joe show. Lee, is there one special moment when you sang that song that still resonates? I got people who are texting me now. Like, I remember when he sang that at the Sugar Bowl when Tennessee beat Miami in 1986.
No,
is there one.
One
moment? Yeah, right. Is there one moment that stands out to you when you sing that song that you still think about to this day?
Well, two RNCs. The one was with Ronald Reagan, and the second one was with Donald Trump. The performance on the Nimitz aircraft carrier during the Persian Gulf conflict. There's orange, apples and oranges about how I would say this is more important than the last one. But it's always that moment where I sing at a football game or Yankee Stadium after the attack on America in 2001. Naturally, that was a big moment. We're honoring 300 firemen that fell. And Carnegie Hall honoring the 100 cops that had died in the Trade Towers. Again, it's hard to say. Some are emotional, some are uplifting. Like I sang Monday Night Football for the Dallas Cowboys this past Monday, and you get, you know, 60,000 people stand up and sing along with me. It's just really hard to say what's better than the last one or what
Sure.
will be more important than the next one.
What does it mean that other artists have covered this song?
Oh, that's flattering. I mean, I sing a couple of songs from other artists, and I, you know, when you have the ability to be able to sing something, we filmed a video called 40 Years of My Hits, where I started in Nashville in 1979 and joined the label at MCA with Reba McEntire, George Strait, the Oakridge Boys, and Barbara Mandrell. And we had 40 singers from Nashville come to Huntsville and film this thing. And I had Jamie Johnson sing Ring on Her Finger, Time on Her Hands, which was our second record. And I just said to myself, I'm so blessed to have the ability to sing a song that could have been his hit. And it was just amazing. I sitting there watching all these singers sing the songs that we had major records with. And so that's why I don't mind anybody singing God Bless USA. I hope you do. Beyonce covered it. The military gets carte blanche on it, no matter where they play it, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, the Coast Guard, the Space Forces. I get these videos all the time from those major orchestras and bands playing the song. It makes me very proud.
Oh, absolutely. Lee, what's on your schedule now coming up for the rest of the year?
We're still on our usual touring schedule other than personal events, and I have several of those as we continue. I'm in Florida tonight with a veterans tribute with an organization. I'll be back on tour in Indiana and Arkansas this coming week, and then we're going to do an event again in Florida next week honoring America. I have to just kind of wait and see what's going to transpire for 2026 in America's 250. My schedule will be pretty loose next year, just kind of waiting to see where I will be. I really don't know. We just got back from Israel, where we were there at the request of Ambassador Huckabee, and we were there for 8 days. I was also in Qatar with the president. So as things kind of move forward, I just kind of have to keep my schedule a little more loose next year than it has been. This year we probably did 85, 90 dates on the road with my band, American Spirit, and we'll just see. You know, what it holds.
I love it. Lee, we're getting several texts from veterans who just say, please tell him thank you for everything you've done for veterans. So, Lee, from Chase and myself, thank you for taking time to do this and for all the veterans out there. God bless you, sir. We appreciate you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be in Nashville, Tennessee, one of the greatest places on earth. Happy Veterans Day.
Happy Veterans Day. Thank you, Mr. Greenwood. We appreciate it.
All right.
Lee Greenwood joining us on the program. That's a heck of a surprise.
There you go, buddy.
I don't know how you pulled that off. But.
Had his name in the phone. I was like, you know what? We've talked to him in the past. But he goes out of his way to honor veterans every single day. Of course, we got Gary Sinise also in Franklin who does that on and on. So, again, our question of the day is, and we'll get to a lot of us in the next hour, tell us about your favorite veteran. We need to know a name and why they're special to you. We've had so many great emotional ones today on this Veterans Day. 615-737-1025. Call or text. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we'll do that in hour number three. God bless the USA. On this Veterans Day, live from the Marker Key West, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.